And my apologies for not being there in person today. I'm feeling a little under the weather, so I'm just going to hang here.
Oh, no worries. Sheila, thanks for dialing in. We appreciate it. So let's go ahead and get started with roll call. How about we start with folks online? Betty?
Betty Kamikawa from Toledo and representing Graceland Haven today.
Fantastic. Sheila?
Sheila Stiley, Executive Director, Northwest Coastal Housing.
Wendy?
I am present.
Thank you. How about Bonnie?
I'm here too.
Fantastic. Thank you. Anybody else online? Is that everybody?
Scott Goodman is one of.
Yep, Scott Goodman with Echo Northwest.
Okay. Hi all.
And then
Cynthia Jacoby, Newport City Council. Judith Jones, St. Stephen Episcopal Church.
Jan Kaplan, City Council.
James Bassaway, Housing Authority of Lincoln County.
And we have Beth Goodman, Eco Northwest, and city staff. Fantastic. Next on, we have the approval of the minutes from the February 16th meeting. Trust everybody had a chance to review the minutes. Would entertain a motion to approve the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes have been adopted. Okay, so next up we have debrief the online survey results. I will be running this slideshow, I guess, and Beth, do you want to?
Yeah.
Pick it up?
Yeah, can you all, I'm using a microphone tonight, so can you all hear me okay on the phone? Okay, great. So Derek is going to bring up the PowerPoint for us. I believe that you got, probably just yesterday, a copy of the survey results. I'll be running through most of the items in there. It echoes a little bit, I apologize. So if you have any questions on anything that we don't discuss, we can certainly answer that. And my colleague, Scott Goodman, who has no relationship to me, just happens to be also good, did the analysis on this, so he can help us understand that. So here we go with that. So here's our usual project schedule. We're here. This is the last meeting of the advisory group. This is meeting number 9. You guys have slogged through all of this with us, and I know that I'm at least very grateful. I'm sure that Derek is also, of course. For those that can't be here, we're looking at scheduling a one-hour discussion with them to get any final comments that they have on the housing production strategy. So if you go to the next slide, Derek, we'll be talking about next steps in a few moments. So here we are, right in March, with our draft housing production strategy report that I believe that you all have received. It's a very long report, of course. The guts of it, you've seen it all. We'll be talking about the pieces today that you hadn't seen at this point. It's almost finished. Derek's got, I think, a few more comments that he's promised me next week. So we'll be getting that out for the decision makers pretty soon. Next slide, please. That's just a reminder of what we're here for today. So go ahead. And here we will talk about both the community survey that we did and the stakeholder interviews. So if you go to that slide, this is just a summary of the outreach that we've done throughout the project. You all helped us with 9 community conversations with 70 participants. We had one open house, that's the virtual open house we're going to talk about today. We've got another open house that is coming up in just a few weeks. We'll talk about that at the end. We've got 9 PAC meetings total as of today. 9 will be completed. A number of developer interviews that we did earlier in the project when we were working on the constructability analysis. Most of them, a few of the developer interviews we did more recently, and we'll talk about those in a few minutes. And then also the service provider interviews, where we reviewed with them the strategies we had and got some feedback on that. So next slide, please. The virtual open house. What this was to inform the community of the work to date and to gather feedback about some of the strategies that we'd proposed. It was held online March 1st, March 20th. We had 454 participants who answered at least one of the questions. Not everybody answered all of the questions, but I think we had something like 240 people leave comments at the end. So we know those 240 people made it all the way through, plus some of the other people who didn't actually leave a long written comment at the end. Yes, ma'am.
Were you pretty pleased with the numbers that responded? Is that kind of typical? Or
no, that's not typical. That's really good response. It's a very good response.
Good response. Okay.
This is not a survey that's intended to be statistically valid because we didn't go out and do a random sample. So this is more of an opinion survey.
Mm-hmm.
On the Spanish speaking side, we only had two responses, which is lower than we were hoping for. So that was a little disappointing there. But overall, 454 people giving us their opinion about these issues and paying attention to these issues, that's quite a bit.
Okay.
I could even calculate that as a percent of people in Newport, so that's quite a bit. Next slide. So not surprisingly, most of the people who responded, 60% lived in single-family detached housing. That's actually similar to the percent of housing that within the city is single-family detached. I don't have that number in my head, but it's about, I think it's 70-75% of your housing stock is single-family detached. So we've got some people who are living in other types of housing that's not just single-family detached. So we did.
We even had an ADU.
We even had an ADU or two. Exactly.
I do think manufactured is probably a little bit underrepresented. I think some folks don't understand that they're in housing that was manufactured.
Yes, I think that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think nominally low.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So we did get a wider range of responses. We didn't collect data about gender and income and that kind of thing, but it's likely that you know, for most of these surveys, you get overrepresentation of white females who are older and more affluent. So it's likely that that's some of what we got in this also. We go to the next slide. And about 29% of people who responded rent their home, and 4% probably live with other people or some other situation. So we definitely had people who rent their home responding to the survey, as well as 2/3 of respondents who own their home. I just want to call out, can you go back to that slide?
Oh, sure.
Some of the comments that Scott added in here about employers in the count, about respondents and some of the comments that we had in the survey. I asked Scott to just pick out some of the more interesting comments, whatever direction they were in. And so, you know, this one gets to employers articulating what we know is the issue: availability of housing, cost of housing, quality of housing. We know those things are issues, so it's good to hear some of that echoed back. So this one I'm going to stop on for just a few moments and make sure that anybody who's online, if they have any comments or questions, they can ask it. But of course, the responses for what are you most concerned about, housing availability, cost of rent, cost of home ownership, property taxes, and condition of available housing, those were already pretty high up there. They were all 50% or more, including quality of affordable housing, available housing. Condition of available housing, quality, interesting. So those are all top concerns, and those are the things that we expected to be top concerns. What I'm happy to see is too much growth too quickly wasn't a concern for a large share of people. Discrimination in housing, I'll just call that one out. 41 people are concerned about that.
41%?
Yes, 41% of people are concerned about that. That says to me that either they were discriminated against or they have friends or family who was discriminated against. So while some of us don't see that in our day-to-day life, it's important to know that it definitely affects people.
Do you think that Sheila Smiley has
your hand raised, and I just wanted to acknowledge that Dr. Leslie Ogden joined our meeting.
Thank you. Sheila, what is your question or comment?
Oh, thank you. One of the questions I had, actually, can you explain to me what the difference was between condition of available housing and quality of available housing?
No, I don't think I can. I think we just had both those questions there, and I think that they are very similar to each other. It's in retrospect that I look at it and I go, did we need condition and quality? I think that they're synonyms. The responses say okay. That the respondents thought that they were synonyms also.
Thank you.
I do. I just wanted to ask if there's any other comments from the people on the phone. James, go ahead.
I had a question on the survey, and maybe it's more detailed than you went into, but did you correlate, like, the discrimination in housing to the percentage of people that were renters versus owners?
No, we didn't try to do a cross-tabulation of that kind of thing, no.
I think we would find probably that the majority of that would be in renting.
People who own their home now, who used to rent, who experienced housing in the past, discrimination in the past, mm-hmm. or who experienced discrimination in trying to buy housing, mm-hmm. in lending, in people being willing to sell, mm-hmm. those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So this one, this quote here, about being a working person who's homeless with their family, and having to look at moving away from Oregon, I think that this kind of thing is what we're seeing in so many of our communities. I don't know. We cannot afford to rent. I think that says it all right there. Go on to the next one. This one is one that we have shown a little differently in the packet that we sent you. Right in the packet, we showed number of respondents. For each of the types of housing, for each of the issues. Here we're trying to show the percent of total people who responded to the survey. So, of course, these things add up to way more than 100%. But the use in this is looking at it. Affordability is a concern for every housing type. More than half of respondents indicated that that was a concern for every housing type. Not enough parking is a concern for some housing types, but no more than 30% of people indicated that it was a concern. So parking is a concern. I would say, you know, a third of people indicating that they're concerned about it is substantial, mm-hmm. Significant, but it's nowhere near approaching affordability. Compatibility, I was pleased to see that in none of these categories did more than a quarter of people indicate that they were concerned about compatibility. For multifamily, there, you know, 24% of respondents were concerned about compatibility with existing neighborhood. It was interesting to me that single family detached came up as something that people were concerned about compatibility. So everybody's concerned about compatibility in some direction or other.
Might be the size of the new house.
Yeah, it could be the size, small single family units.
Or it could be they're concerned about large single-family buildings, houses, big mansions, or something like that coming into their neighborhood.
Certainly could be. I was happy to see that building design wasn't a big concern for the most part. A little bit more in cottage housing, but you've got so little cottage housing that says to me that the city probably has its design standards, at least according to the people who responded to the survey, you know, dialed in pretty well. So you've got design standards that are meeting the community expectations, is what I'd say, for a lot of your community. Concentrations of these different housing, fewer than 20% of people indicated that they were worried about concentrations, and the largest share with multifamily followed by duplex through quads. Too much parking. A few people indicated that they had those concerns. So, I mean, affordability just stands out as that is, obviously that's the issue, and the community perceives that as the issue. So we aren't entirely wrong about that. I think as the city is thinking about what to do about parking, I think you have more degrees of freedom than you might have imagined on that. I don't mean, I'm not suggesting require no parking. I'm just suggesting, are there ways to require a little less parking? Derek asked me to come with a fact and figure about, you know, parking accounts for X percent of the unit cost. And it's actually, since we're talking about surface parking, I was talking to Becky about this, and she's like, yeah, it doesn't really quite equate that way. It's not like if you're doing structured parking. When you require more parking, surface parking, you can get fewer units on the parcel. So large parking requirements are going to allow you to have fewer units on the parcel, and that's going to drive up costs. And exactly how much, it's really going to be a thing-by-thing issue. So where there's opportunity, and I would think of things like looking at senior housing. For instance, is there opportunity to require a little bit less parking for that kind of housing? Because you might have fewer cars per household. I think sensible solutions. Yes, ma'am.
Sheila Sally has her hand raised.
Sheila, please.
I should have just shown up anyway down there. So a couple of things. I feel the need. I should have raised it earlier. I want to talk about the discrimination piece just for a second to give you guys a little bit greater understanding of what we are seeing at our shelter, for instance. We are actually seeing discrimination because people are in a shelter or presently homeless, even for individuals trying to go into adult foster care, into adult living facilities. That is coming up as perhaps they're not a good fit because of that. So we've had to work past those discrimination pieces of just the fact that they've been homeless. And so it's taken extra work to do that, and which is kind of scary because we have seniors in our facility who should be in these care facilities, but because of their homelessness, they were a query of concern. Another piece just to talk about too with that is when it comes to the space of homelessness and then shelter, there's always a stigma now that's attached to that, that we have really been trying to get past people and to unwind that in their minds. People are homeless now for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of implications in that, and it's taking some time and a lot of energy and effort to really talk through. So we, again, find ourselves in the space of having to really work hard with just the fact that they're homeless because of the stigma of mental health and addiction, which is high, but it isn't always the case. And I don't know, after COVID, who isn't in some of that anywhere these days? But just saying. In addition to that, I think there was an article, too, that came out in the newspaper, or not in the newspaper, an article I saw on the, on the thing I get on my phone, and it was actually about Newport and the high cost of living. And one of the things that it stated was, if you want to live in Newport, which is a beautiful place to live, you need to anticipate waiting a year before you can actually live in Newport. You have to be in the area for a year before you can actually find a place in Newport to live. That was astonishing, as well as some of the cost factors that they were looking at to live here. So there are those different implications that are now out, and people are leaving the area. My daughter just moved to Iowa, as a matter of fact, because they couldn't make it here. So there's that. And then with the senior housing part, I just want to say, in addition to senior housing and working with parking, mental health housing is also another one that has very limited amount of parking, as well as disabled. So those are key places to look at that would be very effective in reducing some of those parking concerns, especially since, I don't know, mental health and addiction seem to be such high on people's discrimination list. It just might be. I'll be quiet now.
Sheila, thank you for speaking up about discrimination. It's one of those things, I think, that those of us who don't experience it or haven't experienced it directly find it a little hard to entirely understand. So thank you for giving voice to that.
You see it in many of the comments.
You do see it in a lot of the comments.
It shows up in a lot of contexts and not just in the housing issue. Just had a close case of it at the ER, as a matter of fact.
Of the what?
At the ER.
Yes, ma'am.
I want just to comment, parking is an issue to me. So I did want to point out it's the second largest concern.
It is. It is. I would not say that parking is not a concern.
It's hard to know when people say parking is a concern. Is it, you know, are you worried that you can't park in front of your house, or are you worried that you can't find a place to park? Are you worried that, you know, so we don't drill down into that, but that it's something I think we need to be looking at.
No, it's a fair point, but I think it's also a fair point. The challenge is that it has a direct correlation to affordability.
Yep, so clearly.
So to drive that number down is likely going to drive the affordability number up. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have even more affordability issues. So that's the trick. I can see the parking too much in the northeast quadrant up by the high school, all those areas, Eads. You have a lot of streets that have tons of on-street parking that's not utilized that much.
Right. So it really
that would be an excellent candidate area for, say, hey, give them up on-street parking credit because we've got boatloads of on-street parking.
Right, right.
In other areas where we put in place narrow street standards, which reduce the cost for the developer, but then don't provide for on-street parking, well, that maybe isn't a great candidate for relief from off-street parking requirements.
It's not a standalone, what you're saying, and I agree with you, it's not a standalone issue. It's not parking, but it's parking in the context of where you are.
Right, and what's available.
And something that we really need to give a lot of thought to, because...
I think that is exactly the point. Have reasonable parking minimums for the whole community, and then look at opportunities where it makes sense to decrease parking for, say, particular projects.
And when your affordability challenges get even worse and worse, that also tends to exacerbate your parking problems, because now you've got people double, tripling up in units to be able to afford it on a rental basis. And so now you've got a pile of cars, more than what you'd anticipated,
right,
had it been just a single household in that
unit.
Right.
Are there other comments on these concerns? Okay, then we will move it along then. So this one, other housing types that people would like to see. Certainly tiny homes and tiny homes on lots came up. Modular and prefabricated housing came up. Transitional housing came up. And I believe that in this, we did define all of these terms because they're sort of abstract unless you know what you're thinking about. Things that came up also, I mean, all of these were supported in some way, but co-housing opportunities, single room occupancies, RV parks that allow long-term occupancy, all of these had more than 50% of people who said that they support, and fewer than 25% in most cases, I think the RV is 33%, who said that they don't support. So lower levels of don't support, except the RV parks that allow long-term occupancy. So this, I think, points to some things that the city should be looking at in the future, at the point where you're ready to have these conversations about tiny homes, transitional housing, modular and prefabricated homes are things that you're going to see more action on in the state, I believe, because there's a couple of bills around those that'll be supporting those kind of housing coming into Oregon more. So, and transitional housing.
Are you aware of any research or data on how long people stay in tiny houses?
I'm not aware of any of that. I'm going to give my colleague Scott a chance to speak up if he's aware of any of that. I'm just not sure that they've been enough of a thing for quite long enough,
right,
and that anybody's really done any research. Scott, are you aware of any research that's been done on that? How long people stay in tiny homes?
No, but I've made a note of it, and I can do some searching for that as well.
Okay.
Because it's an idea that's attractive to me, but then I think, are we talking about a transitional housing in tiny homes, or is it permanent housing?
You know, for some people, it's permanent housing. Mm-hmm. If I had to live with my husband in a thing that was smaller than 500 square feet, probably a thing that was smaller than 1,000 square feet, I don't know that we'd come out of that. But for some people, it's exactly what they want. Yes, ma'am.
I actually have a couple of members of my congregation in Waldport who do live in tiny homes permanently.
And they're probably very happy because they've adjusted their lifestyle, and maybe they want a more minimalist lifestyle.
Yep. And chose living in a smaller place and not having to work so desperately
to afford their home.
Afford their home, yep.
And you can get some tiny homes that are certainly not the kind of thing that you're talking about when you talk about transitional housing and you know, basic shelter that are very
upscale.
Well.
There's a tiny home village in Waldport. Yeah. That's pretty upscale.
Yeah.
Where is that?
It's south of town. It's actually between Waldport and Yahats. So,
Are there any other comments about these? Any other questions?
Yeah, I find it interesting that the RV park, the amount of people that do not support for long-term occupancy is interesting.
I wonder if some of that doesn't have to do with the fact that we actually do have some fairly old RV parks that aren't built to modern standards that are in pretty rough shape. Although Eastside was, they did a lot of work on that recently in the last few years, but we do have several of those. So it may be that, you know, when you're looking at this, a lot of these, you know, we don't have in Newport, so it's whatever somebody's visualizing. Whereas with RV parks, you know, long-term occupancy, they may be thinking of things that we actually have here. Mm-hmm. So the standards matter in terms of getting the design standards in place so that you don't have issues that would lead to folks being upset with that type of development.
Good point.
Any other comments? Go on to the next one.
Only that I love that transitional housing is high on the list. I think that's fantastic.
Indeed. So this one is, we gave very little information about each of these actions because giving a lot of information about the actions, frankly, would drown people. As you all know. I love that lobbying the legislature is the first one. That's not going to make direct change in Newport today, but I think that they're not wrong. We need long-term change in the state. Support partners for building affordable home ownership. Work with landlords and tenants to ensure that rental housing is well-maintained. That's the maintenance housing maintenance code. Support regional housing partners with development for low and middle income housing, and establish a low barrier emergency shelter. These are all ones that got above 50%. I'm not saying that the ones that are below that are a poor idea. I'm saying that these were evidently an easy sell because we really didn't provide enough information. So when you look down at number 11, provide a 10-year property tax exemption for low-income home buyers. That only scored about a third of people thinking that was a good idea. But in part, I think the reason is they don't necessarily understand how that can work with other strategies to support a set of policies around increasing home ownership. So that indicates to me that there's some opportunity for education, essentially, and discussion about the city's approach to home ownership.
I wonder if that also seems to tie into, because there was a lot of feeling came across in the comments around people feeling that their property taxes are
way too high.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a subjective.
You know, Jan.
I like to pay taxes. I do. It's a responsibility, but for a lot of folks, you know, any taxes are bad. And the context is, you know, so that there was a concern that came across in some that, well, why would we give a tax break if I'm going to have to pay for it?
Right. And I think that is something that would be part of a public conversation. It's too complicated to get across in a survey. And it's nuanced, and you won't convince everybody.
Right.
And then there's the fact that you probably would choose not to give this out to too many households. You need to have a cap of some sort, looking at the city's fiscal situation.
It just struck me as something that needs to be, again, addressed because people respond negatively to something because of their perception of it, not necessarily because of the reality of it.
And we didn't even try to get a
there was no selling in this one.
Yeah, no.
Well, we also run into the reality that we have a number of folks in the community that are on fixed incomes and mm-hmm. don't have the capacity to take on the additional tax burden. And then that's a, yeah. a stressor for them because it's not that they have additional resources they can draw on to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Equity all around.
Sheila,
yeah. please go ahead.
Well, Mayor Waukee up in Lincoln City brought up a good point when we were talking to the governor on Friday. And it was around the transient room tax and the structure that's there that reduces the areas and really puts barriers on where the money can be spent. It's one of their largest pools of funds, right? So I'm just curious, you know, maybe that is a legislative piece within lobbying the legislature where that something like that would make sense. And you know, would that impact Newport at all if that were to be addressed? And would it be worth it? It is for Lincoln City.
That is, I believe, one of the items in lobby the legislature.
Yep.
I would just have to get down to that part. Sheila, I think that looking at reform for how the state allows transient lodging tax to be used, I think it has a very clear tie with housing because you have workforce housing needs for fairly, you know, low and maybe moderate income households that work in the tourism industry. I'm not saying that you'd want to use all of the funds from the lodging tax for tourism, but you should be looking at the opportunity to use a larger share of them.
And just judging by the comments on vacation rentals, transient room tax applied to that, it seemed like there were a lot of people that would be in favor of heavily taxing vacation
mm-hmm.
rentals.
Everybody wants to tax somebody else.
Yeah, for affordable housing. That's just from the comments. It seemed like that yeah. was a recurring theme.
Yeah, certainly. Any other comments?
It is just interesting to think that if your problem is that you've got too much room tax, or you know you're flush, it means that you don't need to be doing a lot of advertising.
You know, I mean, I've done a fair bit of work for Travel Oregon on the transient lodging tax. So let me be honest here about how cities are using it, I would agree and disagree a little bit. So, you know, you want to make sure that your tourism facilities are in good enough condition that you're able to attract people. But from my perspective, I would say tourism facilities, including things like your sewer, and that's not covered under tourism facility. So I think there's room to look at it a little more holistically. I am not Travel Oregon, however, nor one of their lobbyists. Any other questions or comments? Then I think we can go on. So then we had discussions with, we just scrolled down a tad bit, thank you, with a number of stakeholders.
It's a full slide.
It is a full slide. So we talked to somebody from Samaritan House, Proud Ground, Commonwealth Companies, the owner of Surfview Village, Dev Northwest. Dev Northwest and Proud Ground are both land trusts. Lincoln County School District, we talked with them about the McKinney-Vento data, so that included Dr. Gray on it. And then we talked to OSU about their plans for student housing development. We haven't incorporated the results of that into the HPS, but that's something we will be adding before it gets final. So when we look at this from the top level and talking to those folks, there's a high level of agreement, I think, that we have the right actions in the HPS or that Newport's already implemented. I heard that a number of times when we were talking to Proud Ground in Dev Northwest, and we were, and to a certain degree, Commonwealth Companies, but the developer at Commonwealth wasn't as familiar with Newport specifically. But when we were talking to them, essentially we were asking the questions, what would it take for you to come here and do more work? So to build more homeownership housing that was part of a land trust. And the incentives that we were talking about land banking, system development charge waivers, looking at different funding sources for affordable housing, even though those are scarce. What we heard is that that's the kind of thing we're looking for. We also heard we're looking for a certain amount of flexibility in the communities that we're working with, about working for us, working with us, us being the land trusts. And we've communicated that to Derek. Those are some of the details. But I also heard, especially from Dev Northwest, real interest in coming and doing some more work in Newport. So it's nice. Those are promising sorts of things. When we talked about houselessness, of course we heard a lot about challenges and desperation around houselessness. The low barrier emergency shelter and warming center seemed to be a top priority. There was some discussion that I think is a little more political than I'm going to get about how to have that managed and operated. Those are things that will need to be worked through. The school district representative, I really wanted to call out that they talked about the need for supporting families with children, which can be a challenge at a low barrier shelter. Because a low barrier shelter can have people who may not be people who you necessarily associate with having near children as much. So how can you, I'm not a shelter operator, obviously. How can you address that and make it okay for families with children to be there too? Those would be challenges. Let's see, and then the last piece I talked about land trust as an opportunity. If you go to the next slide. Obviously, we talked a lot about collaboration between organizations and the city as necessary for successful outcomes. Thinking about that in the context of what can that collaboration do that's not necessarily the most obvious thing, but avoiding displacement of people who can least afford to be displaced. So some of those partnerships and those discussions can lead to that. Need for more supportive services and resources for staff. That's especially going to be true around permanent supportive housing. This is an issue for Newport as well as the rest of the state. So helping find households find and retain housing, it's hard to do. It takes a lot of effort. And that's just at that level of helping people exit the system of homelessness. And then a little about the upcoming Hatfield Marine Science Center housing development. They're planning for two phases of development with 75 units in each phase. And phase one, they're looking at, I think it was going to be under development this year, and expecting it finished in fall 2024. So not necessarily by the beginning of the fall term, but later on in fall. In the discussions, you know, it was clear that they'd made a few different approaches to doing the housing, eventually got to the point where the Marine Science Center organization is able to move forward with it without going through OSU housing, because OSU housing just wasn't quite understanding the fact that this was for students as well as staff, so they were really struggling with that. And of course, there was concerns about vacation homes and the impact on availability of long-term rentals.
And before we move on, I did want to share, with respect to affordable housing, it's interesting. I've been contacted by a few affordable housing developers recently. I think part of this has to do with the fact that there's quite a bit of funding flowing through this current legislative session.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff. And while they do ask questions about what kind of incentives we have, that's not the first question out of their mouth. The first question out of their mouth is, do you have land? Or are you aware of some land that we would be able to acquire for this purpose? Mm-hmm. That's the first thing out of their mouths, and we have very little of that. And so, it does in my mind seem to place an emphasis on land banking, but that does require a source of funds to do that.
And the source of funds that we've talked about most has been about urban renewal, but that's mostly about the potential for a new urban renewal district. Up north, which wouldn't happen for some time.
Well, we do have funds in the north side district for strategic site acquisition. That's what the agency just tapped into to purchase a couple of properties. But there is a balancing act. I mean, there's a lot more of it's reserved for infrastructure, and that's very important to the equation as well. So.
Yeah, that was my question. Do they ask about infrastructure? How close it would be to infrastructure, water, and
yeah, those come as part of that. You know, is, you know, how developable is it? You know, it, but frankly, I don't point them to properties that are undevelopable. I try to be careful about that. You know, properties that could be reasonably served are the ones, but we don't have a lot of them. So, yeah.
Are there any other questions or comments? We're going to go on and talk about strategies some more in a few moments. But before we go on.
Okay, final actions and ready.
All right. So the questions we're asking you here today is, do you have any final questions? Do you have any suggestions for changes to the HPS document? Do you have any a recommendation for the City Council on adoption of the HPS? And I think we'll tackle that last question last. You all just received the HPS document not that long ago. Derek, would it be okay if we allowed people a little more time to review the document and send you any comments they
sure.
had on it?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that by end of day April 7th? Does that seem a reasonable time period?
Comments from us.
Any additional comments? I don't think we've had this proofread. Can't remember which ones we've had proofread, honestly, Jen. So let us say if there's some typos, you're welcome to call them out. But it still needs to be proofread. So with that, I figured we'd walk through a few things. One thing that has occurred to me as I've been working with numerous cities on this, as we're looking at the different actions you've got in the HPS, is generally speaking, these actions, they aren't the bold development proposal itself. These are the things that when somebody comes to you with a bold development proposal, you can say, well, you know, we have land here, we have land there, you know, we've got a policy that would support what you're trying to do here, a policy over there, so that you're able to meet the developer and offer something. Or, you know, build that relationship with, the land trust that may come in and do more work. So you've got the policies there to respond to that. So this is really meant, when you look at this, in combination with the city's existing policies, because, of course, you've got a lot of existing policies that are important. It's really meant to act together and make a, think of it as a hero sandwich. Layers that work together. So Derek, do you want to go on to the next one? So this is just, I don't think we need to go through this. I just wanted to remind us all of what the existing strategies are in Newport. And of course, this is a very short list. You've got other strategies that the city has implemented over time. And we can come back to this slide if we need to. And our summary of actions, which is far too small for me to read from here. We've got urban renewal, looking at the home buyer opportunity limited tax exemption. Thank you. Reducing development code barriers, adjusting how you're allocating your construction excise tax, lobbying the legislature, low barrier emergency shelter and warming center, establishing that. Looking at supporting development of a regional entity focused on low and middle income housing development, participating in the regional homelessness action plan, paying your system development charges, at least in selected cases, for workforce housing, growing partnerships with community land trusts, outreach and education to promote equitable housing access, pursuing your urban growth management agreement change with the county, and then researching rental housing maintenance code feasibility. So those are the different actions we've got. None of them are new. Whatever updates and questions we had in the last meeting, we would have integrated that kind of information into the descriptions in the HPS. And before I go on, are there any questions or comments on these? We go on then. The new thing, if I'm remembering correctly, is we've got an implementation schedule here. So what the city is required by the state to do is establish a schedule on which it's going to implement each of the actions. If the city doesn't implement an action by the deadline it set itself for, then the city has to do some reporting to the Department of Land Conservation and Development.
Derek, could you enlarge that a little bit?
It is hard to see.
Yeah, maybe we'll just go through it like
line by line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can't.
Can I look at mine with me?
I can see now.
Okay, thanks.
So you might do something sooner than you've gotten the schedule, but you want to try not to do anything later than you've gotten the schedule. So, for instance, I'm going to choose an easy one, the implement the homebuyer opportunity limited tax exemption. Oh my gosh, that's long. HOLTE is what we call it. We've got a deadline of that of 2025, which means December 31st, 2025. If the city hasn't adopted it by then within 90 days of that, so by the end of March 2026, the city would need to have informed DLCD that it hadn't adopted it and why, or the city would have needed to have made a change to a GHPS to change the schedule or remove that and substitute in some other action to support home ownership.
So we're basically putting the conditions on ourselves.
Yes.
Right, and if we don't meet them, the state puts us in the penalty box.
So we need to be fairly judicious about that, it
yes.
seems.
Yes.
Because we can always do something sooner.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the reasons why everything isn't set out in 2024. We worked with Derek to develop the schedule because the person who's going to be in charge of implementing a lot of it is, you know, Derek. And of course, the city council and where the planning commission is involved, they have to have time, appropriate amount of time to work this into all the other things that they're doing as well.
So one of the strategies that we pursued it, I think, and it worked out fairly effectively in 2017, is we batch a number of these together and move them as a single package. And what it does then is it allows the public and policymakers to see the interrelationship between some of the different changes
mm-hmm.
and why they're being done, so you're not mm-hmm. seeing them in isolation. But it also achieves a degree of efficiency so that we can do that because with each of these changes comes a degree of outreach and notification and things of that nature. And so that was my thinking in lining up a few of these would be reducing development code barriers could be lined up with adjusting allocations to the construction excise tax, maybe some changes to SDCs and we bundle it. And maybe even some work on the home buyer opportunity limited tax exemption and bundle that as like a 3 or 4 item package that goes forward.
And some of these things that we're talking about, how about we go through these one by one?
Okay.
So use urban renewal. We've talked about that one where the city's looking at possibly evaluating changes to your existing urban renewal area in the north side or establishing a new north side urban renewal area. This is one that I think is going to take the longest time, in part because you're looking at the South Beach urban renewal area closing up before you can really look at a new urban renewal area. If the city chose to make changes to your existing urban renewal area, that might be a quicker process than a new urban renewal area, but a new urban renewal area might well be exactly what you need. In other words, a place where more housing is more plausible to be developed. That one, essentially, the city council would be taking some action in towards the end of this 8-year period.
And the reason it's not right on the heels of the closure of the South Beach is just timing. It's a conversation with taxing entities, with the county and the other mm-hmm. taxing entities, it could be viewed as bad form to dive right in to create a new one right when you close one, because it does have a meaningful impact to tax revenues that they'll be collecting moving forward. So part of it was to provide a little gap, closure of South Beach, a little gap for everybody to catch their breath, then pick up a conversation about the feasibility of creating it.
So looking at the Homebuyer Limited Opportunity Tax Exemption, Holte, looking at implementing that in 2025, it may well be that that's something that you guys are actually talking about in 2024. And it may well be, you know, ahead of that. And of course, what we've got is adoption, and then later it's actually being implemented. So the things that you're not seeing here are figuring out exactly what the program would be and how it would operate in Newport, and having those discussions with the city council, and figuring out if you want a cap on the number of units that are tax exemptions that are granted per year. Sorry. Then you know, all of that has to be worked out. So, looking at reducing code barriers and changing the allocation of your construction excise tax, those are, I'm not going to say they're actually easy, because some of the code barrier stuff is going to be some interesting discussion, but those are more achievable and more something that is within the usual operation of the city. So by the end of 2024.
Given what the legislature is up to right now, we may not even be doing C. They may be doing C.
With the changes to the variances?
Yeah.
Yes. And if you end up not doing C because of the changes to the variances, in other words, what the legislature is doing, then I would imagine that you'd amend your HPS and remove that for that reason, because that barrier has been removed. Lobbying the legislature, that's just going to be ongoing. You're establishing the low barrier shelter. I have to imagine that part of what has to go into that is you know, figuring out how it's going to operate, all of the fundraising, all of that. You know, I think what we're looking at here, Derek, do you think that the idea is to have it opening in 2026?
Yep.
Okay. And, you know, if that's one that...
If you can beat that, you can beat that, but I don't think that's an unrealistic timeline.
Well, I have to imagine if that's one by the end of 2026 that, you know, the building is half built, but it's still under construction, then the report to the state is it's under construction and it's being built, it's going in. It's just a little bit later than we thought. And I don't see any reason that the state would have a, well, I'm making things up for them, but that's not the kind of thing that the state's concerned about, things that are actually happening and underway. So.
That's a long time off.
Yeah.
It is?
There's a lot of pressure to do that sooner, if we could.
Like I said, that I, you know, given its relative priority, I mean, this is something, that's why that green isn't just in 2026, it's that whole swath from 23 to 26 that's, you know, so if that can be beat, yes. If we can make end of 24 work, that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. But there are pieces that have to come into play that will take time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's why.
I am trying to work with the churches on an interim plan to use the church buildings and with, you know, with volunteers.
Can you speak up just a little bit so our folks on the...
I am starting to do some outreach to the churches to see if we can do an interim plan for emergency shelter to use the church facilities like a week at a time, taking turns.
You're kind of the Corvallis approach.
Yeah, and Eugene has done it for years too.
I appreciate that, because I think that's a wonderful way to maybe get it to a point where it actually works.
And I think if there's a, you know, if there's a sort of, we're not doing this indefinitely, this is an interim plan. The long-term plan is to have a permanent facility, but here's what we're doing because the need is immediate.
Right.
But it's an easier sell too to the churches.
Yeah, it's not all on one. you know, church to try to pull that
right.
off. That's a big burden on that church's membership.
Yeah, but to be able to take turns doing it and see if we can get volunteers from beyond just the church groups, because many of our churches are small and don't have enough volunteers to do it from within the church. So anyway, I'm hopeful. There's been some preliminary conversation about that already. So.
Does anyone know what's happening with the old Builder Source building, old Lumberman's?
I've wondered about that
Me
one, too.
Too.
I actually
yes.
had several members of my congregation say, that looks like a great site.
Well, I can share with you what I know at this point. The tenant themselves have not reached out to us yet, so all I've got is a communication from, there are firms out there that do lead work in terms of trying to figure out
mm-hmm.
entitlement issues, building code issues for their client
mm-hmm.
so that they can compile that and get a better understanding of what it's going to take to get that facility in a condition for
mm-hmm.
the end user. And we have been contacted by a firm that's doing that work on behalf of Harbor Freight Tools.
Uh-huh.
So I can't tell you for certain that's going to be who ultimately lands there,
mm-hmm.
but that they're certainly working through that process right now.
Mm-hmm.
But.
So then the next one is looking at development of regional housing entity focused on low and moderate income housing development. We've got that one set out towards 2028. I assume that is because this is a regional process that is proceeding at the pace that it is proceeding at.
Well, remember, we have a regional work on a homelessness action plan, which
right.
is further down, which is more immediate.
Mm-hmm.
That regional collaboration, I think, needs time to gel before we embark on another regional collaboration
mm-hmm.
that's going to pull many of the same partners and what limited time they have into that discussion. So it's part of it's trying to just be, in my mind, it's trying to be cognizant of limited resources for having these kind of regional discussions, and that effort right now really needs to be in the context of the Homelessness Action Plan, because that's a funded project and initiative.
Now, the Housing Authority is a regional. Why are we supporting development, or how does the Housing Authority fit into that?
Well, it depends, I guess, on what you end up doing with the regional housing entity, and whether the Housing Authority is a player in that formation, because there's areas of housing we work at which may not be in the moderate income levels, are the workforce housing levels that maybe you're focusing on. So whether we would then potentially be a partner on the lower income levels that we focus on, well, other entities are focusing more on the workforce or the moderate income levels that are beyond what we typically would focus on. I think that is part of it. It's going to take a while to figure out the direction on that, which is probably why it's set out further. And then also you're dealing with, well, if you have regional entities, where do you build it? And whether they're looking at building a large development or whether they're looking at smaller developments throughout the county, I think there's a lot of those questions that need to go through a process to kind of figure out what the direction would be.
And there needs to be resources for that. Yeah. And that in of itself is a mustering effort to resource it, because
yeah.
if you're going to have a regional entity, it needs to have funding to do something meaningful.
But if you have a transient room tax change from the state legislature that allows for transient room tax to be spent for
yeah.
workforce housing, then you have your funding source, but it may take a while to get to that.
And then to accumulate funding, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then by that time, you'll have had the development of the Regional Homelessness Action Plan, and then looking at whether the city is going to, in some circumstances, pay system development charges for workforce housing, which would potentially feed into the type of development that you were just talking about, James. So those are set out pretty early. growing partnerships with community.
And just real quick on item I, paying the system. That would be coming out of our housing construction excise tax. So we already have a funding mechanism for that. So it's really more of a decision on distribution. So we're in a little bit better shape. That's why it makes sense for that to be earlier.
Good. Yeah. Growing partnerships with community land trusts, that's just going to be ongoing, just like the outreach and education. Derek, are you expecting to have some sort of set schedule for outreach and education on some of these, or do you have any sense of how you're thinking about that one? I'm putting you on the spot, I apologize.
Well, typically our outreach it tends to be project specific, mm-hmm. or initiative specific, so it would be what the city is engaged in a particular given time. Now, you know, it could be that we have, you know, some opportunities that are not, you know, where a partner needs assistance that's not necessarily something we know about right now.
Yeah.
Where we would then just gear up for that.
That makes sense. Addressing your urban growth management agreement, you're giving yourself a little time on that. I'm sorry.
Can we stay on the outreach for a moment?
Oh, yes, sir.
Because it struck me in reviewing all of the comments that we have a lot of work to do. And we've got a lot of feeling, huge feeling around STRs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of pushback, and whether you agree with that point of view or not,
but
a lot of people feel
policies.
Very strongly about it.
You've got policies around STRs already, so short-term rentals already.
So there's some level, if those policies are adequate and good, we haven't convinced a lot. There's a fair number of people who haven't become convinced of that. And that becomes a barrier to other development if people are opposed to. Also the property tax issue.
I hear you. With respect to short-term rentals, though, I do get the sense, too, that you have a hardening of positions on that, where it's we don't want any, or we don't want any regulation, and it's becoming more like that, which is harder to really, mm-hmm. is your outreach going to effectively change somebody's mind at this juncture?
It seems like knowing what your regulations are
mm-hmm.
for people who want to know. I mean, I'm not saying that this is an exciting Facebook post or something like that, but that's almost what some people might need.
Well, this happens to be one of the areas where we have more informational material than in many others.
Yeah.
I mean, the other one, that again, is the people's feelings and bias around the homelessness.
Yeah.
And again, there was a smaller sounding on that, but it was very strong. And disappointing to me but say, okay, this is where I live, this is how people feel. And that some of the other things we're trying to do will go a lot better if we've got more support. And will be a lot harder if every time we try to do something, we're flooding the planning commission or the council with people who are wound up with perhaps without good information. And so... Mm-hmm. It seems that one strategy that ties a lot of this together is we can understand, and I struggle sometimes to understand some of this stuff, and I won't claim that I get it all. But for the average Joe, it's like, what the hell are you talking about?
So I think you're advocating for more outreach and education around some of these things.
Very strongly. I see that as very key to accomplishing a lot of this. Is we've asked people for feedback. If we don't respond to that, if we don't acknowledge it, well, then why'd you ask? And so I think we have to get serious about sort of responding to people when they respond when they take the time to respond to us and give them information and that may be a full-time job.
That seems to have implications for Derek for your work plan essentially for your planning staff.
Though that, you know, depending on what we're doing, that means additional staff or
mm-hmm.
additional contracted resources.
Mm-hmm.
Outreach is one of the most expensive and time-consuming things on this list.
I don't think we have this current staffing to do it. That's not my sense. But yeah.
So, but again, too, even if you would add additional resources, you need to be approaching your outreach in a targeted manner with specific objectives in mind, not just we need to do outreach for the sake of doing outreach. Right. We want that to be, you know, in the context of homelessness. We may not be the lead. We may be a partner where we're supporting other entities to get the message out at the right time, on the right, you know, when specific initiatives are moving forward or specific changes are coming down the pipeline. Other areas, you know, like changes to our development codes, we're going to be the lead because mm-hmm. they're city development codes. Mm-hmm. And that's where we need to take that kind of role. Another thing is we want to provide meaningful opportunities for outreach, and we want to make sure that we're reaching out as broadly as we can. But there are windows within which people have to engage. And if they don't, they don't. And that's you know, we always want to retool it and make it better. But, I mean, this is a process. For example, we have an online survey. We run that survey for a period of time. We can't run it for the entire year. We have a window within which we're trying to collect the information so that we can continue to move on and develop these policies. So that's
yeah, well, I mean,
different
I agree
angles
with
to it.
And well, we got a lot of input.
We did.
And the question is, how do we respond to it? Do we respond to it? Do we just say, put it in an appendix, or do we acknowledge it and say, what do we do? And I think we have to acknowledge that there's feeling in this community, whether we, you know, and what, and
yeah,
yeah.
You know, one of the city council goals this year was to do more public outreach and maybe have a dedicated public official
information officer,
yeah, EIO. An information officer who kind of gets out ahead of these things to put out publicity and reasons why we're working, why we're thinking about doing things a certain way. I think that would be a very helpful action. I don't quite know how to get that accomplished. Do you need to hire a person? Do we, I mean, what if there's one to be hired? What do you do? It got a lot of little dots on the paper, you know.
Yeah, no, I've
what's the best way to
do it? I've worked with larger jurisdictions where we've had public information officers. We had multiple ones in Multnomah County when I was there, and you know they serve a very useful purpose. I mean, because they basically offer a go-between the staffs of the different departments or bureaus or however the community is structured and the public. In some limited cases, they can carry the load on the outreach by themselves, but more often than not, they're relying on existing staff
sure.
to do that because they're not experts in everything.
Yeah, they need the background information.
So if it's a land use matter, they're reaching out to
yeah.
we reach out to our office, and we would be mm-hmm. putting materials together for them, mm-hmm. and they may mark them up or whatever, say it is too technical, and we'll put it in more lay terms or whatever. But if it's a public works project, then they're dealing with public works, mm-hmm. or if it's parks and recreation kind of sure. issue, service issue, they'd be dealing with parks, so on and so forth.
So how do we move forward on that?
It's a discussion with Spencer, and it's a budget issue. it really is at the end of the day.
Got a couple of budget committee members here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I would not suggest putting that really specifically in your HPS.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, just to state the obvious.
Certainly around the question of homelessness, I think it makes a lot of sense to rely heavily on community partners for that. You know, and just to reach out and have people who know the homeless community tell stories, you know, in all the places that they
yes.
can reach. Because so much of it is prejudice around who our homeless community is and a real misunderstanding about it. And that I think the way that gets changed is by people who know who's homeless talking about it in their spheres of influence and reaching out beyond their spheres of influence to, you know, and also collaborating with press, getting stories in the press. News, various news sources are a great place.
So can I pause and ask anybody on the phone if you have any comments?
Yeah, Sheila has her hand up.
Sheila, please go ahead.
You know, one of the moments that I don't think it's left an impression on me is when I happened to be sitting in on a city council meeting where they were looking at their city planners re-upping, and one of the city planners on the planning commission had made a statement about how they felt that affordable housing was abusive and how it forces people to live in a state of poverty without any hope of ever getting out. That was 3 years ago. And it gave me a realization, and I think it's tagging along in the comment that was just made, where I realized at that point that I have not been doing my due diligence and my work about talking about affordable housing and the successes that it provides. Like, we had six families in 1 year that went from our affordable housing complex that bought their first time homes. Those are successes that are not heard and understood. And I agree that there is a lot of misnomers and misinformation out there. And a lot is reliant upon us as community partners and the experts in the field to begin going out. We've got our heads down, buried in the work, till we don't come up and take a breath and start talking to others. And we're at the stage in time and space where some doors of opportunity are beginning to open, where we have that ability to begin having our voice without the fear of the repercussions of what that looks like, and the implications that it can make upon our strategy as we move forward. So I think we're in another space, another time, but you're absolutely right. Yes, we can talk about a person, I suppose, that can be hired to do that. But I mean, I'm five of seven generations here, and I don't know about you, but word of mouth goes a really long ways. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've learned about living here. And I feel that carries a lot of weight, and it carries a lot of impetus, and it feels like we just need to be able to rally around and constantly in our statements go back to what we saw in this strategy, go back to the comments and constantly reflect on that and say, this is what we received. This is the information that people said. And if we start doing that, I think it will allow us to move forward even more exponentially than where we are sitting now. But I think that reference point is going to be really important.
Just one question on the getting back to housing production capacity and responding to people. Do we have like an email list of everybody that filled out the form that wanted to be that wanted any follow up information? Or
we didn't ask for follow up information. No.
But is there some way we can maybe distribute at least some of the results of the median survey so that people kind of see what their feedback resulted in and what everybody else was saying?
Yeah, we're getting there. No, I appreciate that, but that's one of the items we're going to touch on before we wrap up this meeting, because we are going to be doing that. That's the in-person open house that we'll be holding on April 12th. And so we'll be running out another batch of the postcards that we'd sent out by carrier route and doing press releases and things of that nature to get the word out for that, to invite people in so they can learn about how their feedback fits within, the strategies that have been developed. And
that'll be posted on the website as well and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
So I'm going to go through the last two and sort of hop through our next few slides kind of quickly. A lot of them we've talked about. The Urban Growth Management Agreement with the county, that is down for 2026, as is researching the feasibility of a rental maintenance code. And then I don't think we need to go through all of these. Could you just slim
before we do that, this is one example where we might want to make an adjustment based on the feedback we received.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was plugged in before we got that was like one of the top responses.
Mm-hmm. So maybe looking at that in 2025 or 2024?
I think it probably does warrant moving it up. At least the discussion about what it would take to do it. Not a policy decision necessarily to move forward and fund it and be fully operational, but at least this is what it would take if the city wants to do it.
When would you like to, what year would you like to put that one in?
What do you guys think as a group?
Well, the green arrow is not, or the green box is just complete research. So basically you're just presenting the options. Is that kind of what the CLEAT research is?
Right.
Yeah.
But you have to actually do the research.
Right. So I think that could be probably moved up.
You could have a begin research box in there.
Oh, sure, we can begin the research.
Begin
we're just
research box.
Also trying to, we're trying to respond to the requirement to say when you're going to have something done. So it's a due date.
Is that in the council goal discussions piece? Cynthia and Jan, do you recall? The rental housing maintenance code.
I don't think we've talked about it.
Okay. We haven't done it. There have been past conversations, mm-hmm. just in a work session, but that didn't come up in goal?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
No.
Which might be something we would want to put forward, to consider as an additional council.
I remember Judith made a comment that she's worked with many people who have problems with their rental houses, black mold, leaks, substandard windows, kitchens, etc., which we don't see, it's, so if we could do a work session on the feasibility and hear some background on it, that would hopefully keep some houses in the housing pool that might otherwise fall apart due to lack of maintenance.
I definitely would want to stretch it, maybe you plug it in as a 24.
Mm-hmm. Move that up.
So move that one up. Scott, make note of this, please, to move up item in M to 2024.
How much staff time would that take, Derek? Roughly, is that doable or?
It's part of the thing. We pull our building official into this because that's where that lands mm-hmm. in many respects is with the building official, mm-hmm. and that's how that's typically resourced. Because they're the folks with the expertise to go through a unit and flag, code compliance issues, which often when you're looking at a maintenance code, that's in line with what they do, but that's certainly not something we could do with our existing staffing. But Joseph's been involved in implementing housing maintenance codes in the past in his work in San Luis Obispo and Bakersfield. And so he has some background on it. It's just carving out some time because he's pretty busy right now. So
he'll probably always be busy.
He will, and that's
so
a fair point.
So we need more staff.
But what I can do is given a reasonable lead time, and this is reasonable lead time, we can come up with a plan to free him up some time. So which means we probably just refer more plan reviews to contract. Mm-hmm. Plan reviewers, mm-hmm. so that he doesn't do as many of those. Now that has its own ramifications. It's not as cost effective for us to do that, but it does free up his time. Mm-hmm. So
and it also doesn't require hiring a whole other person.
Correct, because we have those existing contracts in place. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's doable. Just going back up to see if there's anything else we want to adjust because of that. Good there. I think that's doable.
So then I'm going to cover the next part of this a little bit quicker. If you'll go on to the next slide.
Sure.
So you're required at year four, the city will be required to report on the implementation of the housing production strategy. And then when you're doing your next housing production strategy, you'll be required to report on the effectiveness of your last one. And so we propose the number of monitoring metrics. This is not, these monitoring metrics are not held to these if as you're developing your different programs, if you're like, yeah, we could monitor that, or we could monitor this other thing over here, it makes more sense. Then that's going to be perfectly fine. What we wanted to get in to the plan is different metrics and different ways of thinking about monitoring each of these pieces to seed some ideas for when you're implementing this. So I don't need to go through each and every one of these unless somebody has a question they want to ask about these. The other thing to consider is in monitoring, you don't want to make it so complicated that you can't do it. So we're trying to keep to some sensible things that you would want to track anyway, like how much interest is there in this, how many new units, how much money was spent, things that you'd probably be tracking on otherwise. So are there any questions or comments on any of the monitoring pieces? There's like two more slides of this.
Stop there and just
give people a second to read. Yeah. That's kind of you.
Now, is there a definition of like workforce housing?
Yeah,
we do. Affordable.
We've got it in there.
Kind of the annual monitoring.
We've defined workforce housing as housing that's affordable between 60 and 120% of median family income. So it's not the most, it is an obvious definition, but it's not the most intuitive for a layperson, but it's measurable. Of course.
And that's different than the affordable housing.
Below 60%.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. Okay. Those are, in fact, clearly defined. And in each of the action, that kind of thing is defined.
Absolutely fair point to bring up, James. It comes up all the time. And
yes.
In every conversation you have with groups, too. So it's a really good point.
And I don't know if maybe you want to bracket those. I don't know if this is just a slide for us or if this is in the...
It's in the HPS, but we've got this information in there about what the different affordability levels are in about three or four places. And so putting it in here again would be more repetitive than even we need to be. So for each of the actions, and then there's a table or two where...
Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was what was in there or if this is kind of a summary for us.
No, this is just a summary. So,
yeah, for example, on the land trust, we'll be setting up a meeting with Dev Northwest. You know, again, that's something you would report on as part of monitoring, but Dev Northwest currently has funds from the city that were community development block grant funds for those low-income home rehab loans. And so we need to check in with them on the partners for that.
Yeah,
to pick up a conversation about other initiatives.
It's about like up to 120%, but doesn't have...
Maybe that'll be a report to the council since we...
It doesn't have the lower bottom, it just says 100, up to 100.
They took
this
over.
Has a question on that.
Yeah.
Kind of where I was...
Yeah,
so, Derek, I know that the Habitat for Humanity is also doing their own land lease community land trust, and our agency is starting to venture into that as well.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think there's just room for more growth with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's fair, Sheila. Certainly on a broader range of services. But we do need to do a check-in with them on that specific effectively weatherization type loan program, you know, and how those funds are being utilized.
And how is Proud Ground fitting into that, just out of curiosity?
Less than 60%.
You know, again, they have a number of homes already in Lincoln County, and what is it, 10, 12, something like that. You have three of them in Newport. Part of them is the amount of money it takes for down payment assistance, if that's the type of partnership we have moving forward. You know, that's, I mean, the last round we had, I think the last home that was purchased with down payment assistance in Newport was in 2020. That initial partnership with Proud Ground, and the subsidy for that home was $88,000, $89,000. I mean, that's real money, and it's going to take a funding partnership, you know, and probably leveraging additional state resources and with match from the city of Newport and maybe other local partners, which is what we did with Proud Ground, for that type of initiative to have legs again.
Yeah, and certainly the LIFT program is definitely leaning towards that direction of assisting with it residential neighborhoods of community land trust model housing development. So that's been a great increase that we hadn't been there before.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. And I know that Proud Ground in the past has had some conversations with Bonnie Serkin and Wilder Developer about, you know, land trust housing construction as part of their future phasing. It didn't really go anywhere in the past. I think that part of it was a reluctance on Bonnie's part, a lack of familiarity with the product and concerns about how that fit with her plan development concept. But that may change. And there may be other opportunities too, other than Wilder.
So I want to make sure that we get on to discussing recommendation. So I think the next two slides are just repeating what we've seen before, the potential partners. We talked about that last time. And if you have any comments on these, you can always send comments to Derek. This one's meant to be inclusive of all the possible partners, but to make sure that we're talking about different partners and thinking about that. And then the next one is about the open house.
Yeah.
So I'm going to walk through the reason for the study and what we found, the highest level of key findings focusing on affordability, and the policy approaches from the HPS, asking for feedback on key questions, just like we did in the virtual online open house. Not just quite like we did, because it was a written survey, so it was easier. But we'll hit on the same kind of questions and then answer public questions. And as you can see in red, y'all are invited to attend and help answer questions. My voice does not need to be the only voice.
I think the interactive piece on that with the instant polling, I think we might want to work in, you know, did we get it right type questions too?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is going to be a blend of providing an opportunity for those who've already taken the online survey to see how those comments, you know, fed into the end product, but it'll also be folks who haven't engaged yet that'll be just wanting to get some general information about what's going on. So we'll have to kind of try to address the needs of both audiences.
So we can talk. What I don't want to do is I don't want to say, this is what we had from our online open house. What do you think? I want to say, what do you think? Hey, that's similar to, different than, whatever the thing is, mm-hmm. what we had in our online open house. Mm-hmm. So that's how I'm thinking about doing that. And some of the questions, they don't lend themselves quite as well as they did in the online open house, just because it would be 100 different questions and people get sick of texting. So we need to keep people's attention spans in mind also.
So this is one where they have to bring their phones with them?
They have to bring their phones. Flip
That's
phone.
Right.
I don't care what kind of phone, as long as you can text.
I got to remember that when we do outreach.
Yeah.
Bring your phone.
Yeah.
If you have one.
Well, if somebody doesn't have one, they can always use mine. So, of course, that's only one extra phone, but yeah. So then, after the open house, we're taking this on to the city council. I know we've got some city councilors here. So you've heard of course, everything we've said. What are you, I'm trying to get to the question of, do you have a recommendation to the city council on this, on whether this is something that the city should adopt, and it would be adopted by resolution? It's not a land use document, very specifically, so it doesn't come into your comprehensive plan. And if you adopt it, then it gets sent on to the state, and then you have an obligation to begin implementing it. Of course, if you find, let's take the rental housing maintenance code feasibility. We've only said look at the feasibility of it. And if it turns out it's not feasible because it would take too much in the way of staff time or not address the right problems or whatever, then you have the opportunity to change your housing production strategy. So you're committed to trying to implement it. You're not committed to success at implementing it. Some things may just not be the right thing when you have a look at them more closely. And I think that's okay. And the state staff I've been talking to about this, who are the ones who are the regulators of this, they think that's okay too. So. And the new requirements that are coming out in the new House Bill 2001, which is a complicated House Bill, that's the one with the $200 million funding for homelessness attached to it. Those requirements for the HPS don't apply at this point. Accountability requirements will apply a little bit later on, and as cities do, you know, when Newport does its next HPS, because a lot of the measures of how is the city doing, they haven't been defined yet. There's a lot of writing what the rules will be that'll have to happen over the next couple of years. Yes, ma'am.
Leslie
often
has her hand raised.
Leslie.
Hey, thank you. I just wanted to ask if the leverage here with really getting some buy-in and acceptance is to with the city council, and I don't think we'll have a whole lot of people going, what? You know, but just I guess to avoid picking it apart until it's not meaningful anymore, or taking too long, you know, when it needs to be implemented, is my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if the cities don't individually do this, then the state comes in and does it for you in some way, shape, or form that is yet to be defined. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I would say if you don't do this at this point, you're going to be forced to do something later. It is not the
right.
It's not next year later, but it's not that far off either.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it may be worthwhile to just say, like, listen, you know, there's been a lot of effort, a lot of thought put in this, a lot of community partners, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of the public. This really isn't up for a lot of debate. We need to do this unless you have a really solid reason to do something different.
Leslie, could I invite you to come to the city council meeting? I will certainly say a portion of that, but it's not quite my role to say all of that.
Yeah, no, I was actually planning on it. So no worries. And you know, Cynthia, you know, has the in as well there.
That's one of the best parts about having, I mean, there are a lot of best parts about it, but having Cynthia and Jen on this is that you've heard the conversations, you've seen the input, you've helped.
We need a formal motion to recommending forwarding it, or?
It's your option. I mean, I was gonna ask you as a group, if you'd like to do that, you know, you could certainly put on the table a recommendation that the housing production strategy as presented with the changes discussed, be forwarded on to council for consideration.
Or would a motion or would a letter?
Your minutes, what I would do is capture that in the minutes, and then that would reflect what came out of the group. Mm-hmm. Is that how you guys would like to proceed?
That sounds like a good way to go. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have the information and it'll be officially from the committee. That's what we want, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would it be okay to do a round robin of everybody and have you express your opinion about that? Like, do you support this recommendation? In other words, whomever's posing the recommendation, it posed, and just go round robin about what people are thinking about it.
Stop sharing. We don't have anything else, right?
We don't have anything else, okay. Though. Does anybody want to propose a recommendation?
Motion,
I'll propose a recommendation that we accept the the report, I guess, is that what we're calling it? The report as presented. And I would love it, just incidentally, if we could get a unanimous vote.
I second the motion.
Fantastic. It's been moved and seconded. Maybe we'll just go around. Or how about this? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. Unanimous recommendation.
Yes, I would put an asterisk here.
Oh, and
as a council, that I really believe very strongly around this notion of outreach and education. That, mm-hmm. that the plan is good, mm-hmm. But if we're going to be successful in implementing it, mm-hmm. we've got to engage the public more than historically we've always been successful at that, and that's going to take a real effort. And I think the council is going to need to step up in terms of funding or figuring out how we're going to go about. We need more resource in the outreach area, and a plan to do that. The plan is good, but if it's just the plan, if there's not a way to make that, you know, interactive, get out to talk. You know, if we had better outreach, you'd have an easier time talking other churches into doing mm-hmm. stuff. And if it didn't have to come from you, yeah. you know, if it was just out there in this community context. So I think the plan is good.
Dan, how about we, in the presentation that we do to the city council, we make that point. That, yes. you know, I'm not sure that we're really going to do it, but walking through each of these actions one by one a little bit, so that the city council has a sense of what's going on and has an opportunity to ask the questions. And that is something that we can say that we heard, I think we're hearing it from the committee, that the outreach and education is an important thing, and the city may need to consider increasing resources to support that. Is that okay? I'm looking all around. I'm not seeing anybody shaking their head saying no. All right. Then that is...
You can remove the asterisk.
There you go.
One thing, just so you know, we actually are going to schedule this for a work session with the council in advance of the meeting, just so that all the council members get a little bit of background and have a chance to ask, just have some context before the actual, what was it, May 15th?
Yeah.
That way, everybody, I think, will be okay piecing it all together when you guys actually hold the meeting.
I have a question. Just to follow up on the survey comments, how are you planning to present those to the public? Are they just going to look online at the survey comments, or mm-hmm. how are you going to do this?
Well, we certainly will make that information available and then point it out to those, that folks can take a look at that and see what those comments are. Mm-hmm. Do you have other thoughts on what we should do on that?
Well, I mean, obviously some people who responded did put thought and time into their mm-hmm. comments, and some comments were surprising to me. Some were pretty passionate. Mm-hmm. I just wonder the best way to for the public to contemplate this. To just read through the whole list, or what do you think? I just
we can quote some of the comments, but then you're selecting some comments and not others.
Yeah.
How do you? I didn't print out the whole thing because I didn't want to bring all the comments because it was 30-some pages of yes. comments.
But capturing common themes is a typical way we can
yeah.
do that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So those that are raised most frequently mm-hmm. get highlighted, and then people, okay, they heard what I was saying, you know, and they can see that.
So
share that.
Yeah, you know, I do want to assure the public that they're being heard.
Mm-hmm. That's what we did, I think, under the section called Other Priorities Discussed. Mm-hmm. Where we captured, you know, a common theme about short-term rentals and vacation homes and concerns about that, infrastructure, property taxes. So in what we're presenting, At the April 12th meeting and perhaps in the city council presentation, we can hit on those common themes.
And share with folks, you know what the city has or hasn't done with respect to that. So many folks who respond to this, they may not have context in terms of what the city has or hasn't already done with respect to certain issues.
Yeah, and I think some people seem to be confused about the city versus the county on the vacation rentals.
Yes.
Right. Very different.
Seem to be very
confusing.
Processes
and outcomes and everything, yeah.
That's all I have. I know we've got a visitor. I don't know if you had public comment that you wanted to make. We've got a period for public comment.
Yep, we do.
We're ready at that time.
Floor is yours, Gary.
I'm just listening.
Okay. I wanted to make sure you had a chance to speak up if you wanted.
Does anybody else on the committee have anything you'd like to share before we wrap up this final meeting?
I would say thanks for inviting us to serve on the committee and all the work that Beth and Derek put into, and Sherry as well, put into doing all this. We especially appreciate it.
Yes.
Here, here.
Thank you very much.
Well, we very much appreciate all of the time you've dedicated to this as well. I know everybody.
It's been very interesting to see the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for being here. I mean, 9 meetings is a big commitment. Scott was just asking me earlier today, he's like, is 9 meetings typical? That seems like a lot. Like, it is a lot. We went pretty in-depth on a number of things.
Does Scott have any comments? We haven't really heard from him.
Hey, Scott, what are you thinking about this? You have to unmute yourself, though.
Yeah, appreciating the work that everyone's doing on this and seeing the process unfold this way. I enjoyed going through the survey a lot. I did notice on the slide they repeated a couple of quotes, so I'll apologize for that. That was my fault. Other than that, this has been one of the exemplary types of public processes to watch, so kudos to everyone in the process of that and asking good, difficult questions as well and having the conversations around it.
Scott joined us about a little less than a year ago from Portland State, so he's still a little less cynical about the difficulty of change.
Okay.
I'm glad to have him.
And then just for the committee members who may have joined late, we will be, we have reached out to the other committee members who couldn't attend this final meeting. We'll be scheduling a video conference call with them so they have a chance to share their thoughts as well.
So as a reminder, if you all have any additional comments that you wanna make sure that we get and we incorporate into the HPS as we are finalizing it, get them to us, get them to Derek rather, by April 7th. And if you have, if you say, oh, this sentence doesn't sound right and it's on page 49, you can quote the sentence that way, because your page 49 may be my page 52. That kind of thing will help me find what you're saying and fix it. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.